Welcome back to The Fan. Lori Rubenson here with you and the Yankees. Well, it was it was not the most productive of weekends for the New York Yankees. They thought that they would get to feast up on the Detroit Tigers, and yet a lost weekend, both games ending up being, I guess it was, rained out. To talk about the Yankees, we bring in Brendan Cuddy from The Ledger, was out there in Detroit. Brendan, so here's what I want to know is, was it more of a snow out, a rain out, a fog out? What happened in Detroit this weekend?
We'll call it more of an ice out, Lori. They were, it was rain, but it was snow, but it hurt when it hit your skin. It was the worst possible condition for baseball outside of a nor'easter. But you know what? If you're a Yankees fan, you can kind of look at this as the bright side. They didn't lose.
I think the Yankees were excited to play the 4-9 Detroit Tigers. That, you know, here finally was a team that you could feast up on and fatten up the record a little bit. But you know what? Maybe in a crazy way, as much as it's going to be frustrating and harder, you know, lose an off day and try and wedge in a doubleheader in June. Maybe a little rest, and, you know, is it possible that, I don't know, with some of the players who have struggled and getting back a CC Sabathia, is it possible a couple of off days somehow help them in a crazy sort of way?
Absolutely, 1,000%. And it's not only that, they're going back home and sleeping in their beds. You know, they're going to go back tonight after having a few days off, rest up, go back to Yankee Stadium, where obviously they love playing, and get to hit the reset button against the Miami Marlins, who don't exactly make you shake in your boots either. So, you know, I definitely look at it as a good thing. Yeah, you don't want to lose that off day later in the season, but the bullpen really can use it right now, too, these two off days.
Yeah, that's true, too. And, you know, in terms of reloading the bullpen, what do you make so far of Dellin Betances and Tommy Kahnle, and what kinds of... I don't know, what kinds of adjustments do you think Larry Rothschild can make with these guys to try and right them?
Well, they're two separate kind of scary things, where you got Dellin, whose stuff is still disgusting, but it's the same problems from last year, where you can't really trust him to get anybody out or to strike anybody, to get through an inning. And then you got Tommy Kahnle, whose stuff is down. The fastball is down, and he's saying he feels fine, but that just doesn't make sense. You know, if you go back and look at his starts, his average fastball is his average fastball is down every single time out, and typically that points toward injury. And the Yankees' bullpen is so deep, you think it can handle such losses, but really, Tommy Kahnle kills you, because he was looking like the seventh inning, maybe even eighth inning guy at times, and now you don't even know what he is. So it's really scary. I don't know what Larry Rothschild can do other than cross his fingers and that Dellin Betances snaps into the 2016 version of himself and Tommy Kahnle somehow reaches back and finds his fastball again.
Talking to Brendan Cuddy about the Yankees, and one, you know, with all of the talk and the focus, of course, being on Giancarlo Stanton, and then there's the bullpen, and that's been a lot of the attention on this team. And flying under the radar has been that, you know, guys like Neil Walker, there have been other guys who really haven't played that well. They haven't been getting as much out of him. And in fairness, he didn't really have much of a spring training, so hard to figure out what to expect. But as the Yankees look ahead and think about that second base position, what do you expect them to do? How soon would you expect somebody like Gleyber Torres to come up from AAA?
You know, for a while, I really thought they would leave him in AAA, no matter how well he played, for at least until mid-May or something. Just really let him sink his teeth into the competition there, prove once again that he's beyond it. But Tyler Wade isn't giving you much of a reason to think he's going to turn it around. Neil Walker, he's had his back issues in the past. He's bouncing between second base and first base. You wonder how much that is bothering him at the plate. You know, these guys aren't giving you really glimpses into what they can do and what you want them to do. And I really think that if the Yankees feel that Gleyber Torres, their top overall prospect, is ready to go, you know, come Thursday, when they can finally call him up and secure that one extra year of service time, which is so valuable, which makes him great for the Yankees, you know, to keep that piece for so long, but also makes him a more attractive trade chip if you want to trade him at some point. You know, I think they're going to go with him. I think that you want to call him up when you think there's a long-term spot for him. But if Tyler Wade and Neil Walker aren't getting it done, Neil Walker is not someone you can kind of break from him pretty easily, you know, the way they did with Chris Carter last year. And Tyler Wade, you can send him down to AAA, let him start mashing down there, and see whether he can become a replacement player for you going down the future if someone gets hurt, or if you end up using him at the trade deadline to acquire a pitcher or something like that.
Yeah, I was thinking that the Yankees might wait a couple of weeks to call up Torres, only because they wouldn't want to do it on Thursday or Friday, because it just looks so blatantly obvious that you were waiting for the service time to expire, so you don't have to worry about that extra year of you know, that you get the extra year before he's arbitration eligible. What do you think about that it just looks bad, bad optics if they call him up on Thursday or Friday?
Yeah, it doesn't look great, especially considering Brian Cashman in spring training said, listen, that's not our concern. It's not going to be a deciding factor for us. And if all of a sudden he comes up, it's like, whoa, wait a second, how much of a factor was it? And you wonder how that affects Gleyber Torres as well. If he says, hey, you know, these guys, they probably thought I was ready to go, and they just did it so they can stick me for an extra year. You know, you're kind of messing with my money. So you wonder what kind of resentment that may garner with Gleyber Torres, either now or in the future, when you can really think about it. So you're right. It does look fishy. It does sound bad. But at the same time, if you're the Yankees, these are the rules. The league makes the rules. The CBA makes the rules. And you're going to use them to your advantage. So you can't really kill the Yankees for it.
Talking to Brendan Cuddy from The Ledger about the Yankees, with all the focus and talk about the disappointing bullpen and about, you know, and some of the focus on Giancarlo Stanton, the other thing that can be lost so far in this season is that, ho-hum, oh, by the way, Aaron Judge, yeah, he's hitting .340 with a .470 on-base percentage and a .566 slugging percentage. I think for a lot of us, we thought that this is an outstanding player, but coming off of the season he had last year, you know, how good, you know, can he maintain that standard? And obviously, we're very young. We're 14 games into the season, but how impressed have you been with what Judge has been doing so far?
He's incredible. You know, I've kind of kept this idea this whole time where he's been this monster producer, that he's so smart. He is honestly such a smart guy and such a hard worker that I think that when pitchers make adjustments to him, he adjusts right back. I really do, you know, hindsight being 2020, think that his problem last year was that shoulder. And I think now that that's healthy, you know, Frank Thomas did this kind of stuff for 5-6 years in the 90s. Where he put up numbers similar to this, so you know, Aaron, it's happened before. You know, you hardly ever see it, but Aaron Judge really can be this guy, and I think that yeah, you're going to still be surprised because the strikeout numbers are so high, and you're still going to see him. You know, you're still going to think there's untapped potential as long as those strikeout numbers are so high. But that being said, you can't ask for anything more from this guy because he's just a true superstar in every sense of the word.
Is there an example you can give? You talk about how smart he is, but anything that you've seen or heard anybody else say or a story about him? Because I think a lot of times it's easy to look at him at 6'7" and think about all the physical gifts. But is there an example you can share about what a smart player he truly is?
Sure. I mean, I've known Aaron and I've been covering Aaron since, we'll say, early 2015, maybe late. Yeah, like early 2015. And when he was in AA, AAA, and spring training that year, I can't tell you how many times I've seen him change his swing, change his stance, change his approach at the plate, tinker with this, tinker with that, until he finally found something that really, really works for him and that gigantic frame. He's putting himself, this unicorn of a baseball player, in position to do something and hit balls in ways that no one's really done this before. Aside from Frank Thomas, kind of like I was saying before. So he's just made so many adjustments over the years. And also, I've written about these things so many times, about the changes he's made. And I tried talking to him about them in spring training, about the adjustments he makes and the changes he makes. And he doesn't want to talk about it. He doesn't want to get into it. He doesn't want to get into it anymore. I think he's worried about jinxing himself. But I think he's constantly changing. He's constantly fine-tuning. And I think that's what makes him so great.
It reminds me of another young Yankee star who never liked to talk about his hitting, especially when he was going well, or, you know, mechanics, and that was Derek Jeter. Also, if he was going well, he didn't want to jinx it, didn't want to talk about it. Jeter's Marlins are coming into town, but they're coming in without him. And on the one hand, Jeter himself talked about how it would be awkward to be there, but I saw some interesting quotes and comments from some of the Yankee players about Jeter, and it was interesting to me. I don't know if you talked to any of them, but it seemed like a lot of them had confidence that in the long haul, Jeter would be successful as an owner.
Well, that's the nice thing to say, right? That's the PR thing to say.
So you're not buying it that when CC Sabathia or Brett Gardner or some of these guys say, or Aaron Judge say, you know what, it's Jeter, he's eventually going to figure it out, they'll be good eventually, there's a plan here. Is this lip service PR to say the nice thing, or do you think they believe it?
I think it's lip service.
Okay.
I think if anyone knows or says they know whether Derek Jeter is going to be a good executive or not, and they know definitively, they're lying. I think I can say my buddy would do a great job for this job he's trying to get, but I could be full of it, but I've got a friend who's trying to get a job, so, you know, I'm still going to say these kinds of things to help him out because he's my friend. So I think that's kind of the path these guys are taking. And also, if one of them were to say, no way, that guy can't balance a checkbook, let alone balance a roster, you know, I think if they were to say that, they know what kind of headlines that would create, what kind of intense scrutiny it would bring. It's easier just to say, oh, I thought he'd do well. Oh, I was wrong. He meant well.
All right. So far you're not buying on, that that's authentic. You think it's PR. Fair enough. Let me ask you about a player that we were talking about. When does Ronald Torres come up? We were talking about, obviously, Tyler Wade and Neil Walker have not done well. One guy who's done extraordinarily well when he's played is Ronald Torres. Now, it's a small sample size. Torres has played in the 8 games, but he's gotten 21 official at-bats. Obviously, they use him as the super sub, you know, bench guy, able to, you know, spot start, play a few different positions, whatever they need. Do you feel like Ronald Torres should, you know, from what you've seen, should he be a starting player? I had a caller ask me about this earlier. I was talking about Gleyber Torres, and I thought he would come up fairly soon and man the position at second base. But are we or the Yankees underselling Ronald Torres, or would he be exposed if he were playing every day?
So I don't know if he'd be exposed, but I think Ronald Torres at his best is a high batting average guy who doesn't really get on base as much as you think he does and provides no pop. is a very, very solid defender. There's just not much of a ceiling for those kinds of guys. And while he really seems to deliver every day, and while it seems like such a professional, you know, I don't know that if that's one of the nine guys you run out onto the field on an everyday basis. I've spoken to scouts in the past who thought that if you play him every day, maybe his body can't handle it. He's a really smaller guy. You know, that toe, I don't know. A lot of people think that he maybe can't withstand that kind of grind. Now, Jose Altuve does it.
Right.
So why can't Torres? That being said, those are concerns of that being out there. Also, Ronald Torres is a really good super sub. He's really good at doing what he's doing right now. So why change it? Like, Chad Green is a really good seventh, maybe even eighth inning guy at some point. You know, you can make him into a fourth or fifth starter, and he'd be okay doing that. But why not just keep him in a role that he's already really excelling at?
Another question that I was thinking of as I was watching, yeah, the Yankees not playing this weekend and the Mets did play, is that a lot of the Mets players are attributing some of their clubhouse chemistry to the presence of Todd Frazier. Have you noticed any sort of, you know, was there a different feel when Todd Frazier hit this team last year, and does it feel different without his presence there this year?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think the stories about Todd Frazier changing the culture of the Yankees clubhouse are completely overblown and farcical, honestly. Mm-hmm. I think Todd Frazier comes off like a great guy, and I'm sure he is a great guy. He was very helpful to the media, very giving with his time. But I don't think he really changed any kind of dynamic. That clubhouse is already a good clubhouse. He just really blended in really well, and he was very outspoken. So that gives the impression of a guy who comes in and really invigorates things, but I don't think that's the case with the Yankees. It's such a professional clubhouse run by Brett Gardner, run by CC Sabathia. Nothing changed when Frazier showed up last year. He just got in where he fit in, and he was fun.
All right, interesting perspective. So, Brendan Cuddy from The Ledger, safe travels back from Detroit, and certainly I'm sure you're looking forward to sleeping in your own bed.
Yeah, at some point when I can get a full night's sleep, that would be nice for a change. But, Lori, thank you so much for having me on.